Hey, Josue here with a very quick request. PsychTech is a part of the Geek Therapy Network. Currently, we have 5 different shows, including Geek Therapy, PsychTech, Headshots, Rolling for Change, and Jedi Council. We've made a very quick survey. The link is in the show notes, so you can just look down at the description and it'll be the first link there. If you could just take 1 minute to fill that out, it's an audience survey. We just want to know a little bit more about our audience. So again, if you could just take 1 minute of your time to fill that out, we would all greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
This is Jane McGonigal, the author of Super Better and a big fan of the Psych Tech Podcast. You're listening to Psych Tech Podcast, where you will get the future of psychology and technology.
Welcome to PsychTech, the psychology and technology podcast. Every 2 weeks, we bring you the latest and greatest in brainy bits and technological bits, too. So I'm Kelly Dunlap, and this is Josue Cardona.
Hey, Kelly.
Hey, Josue. How's it going?
All right. I'm excited whenever we get to talk about any of Elon Musk's crazy ideas.
Yep. And this is all about the brainy, bits today.
Today, he is. Yeah. We haven't talked at all about his plan to create all these tunnels. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, I'm down with that. I'm a lot more down with that than what we're actually talking about today.
Well, I mean, I just love that he's like, apparently, right? I mean, this is probably like an urban legend at this point, even though it only happened very recently. But he said, you know, like, traffic is the worst. I don't want to go through traffic anymore. Let's make some tunnels. And then he's got all this land where SpaceX is at. So they just started, you know, like boring and started testing. So when he says he's going to do something, he's probably going to do it, or at least try.
Yeah, he just, I mean, if you've got the capital and the reputation, I mean, who's going to say no to Elon Musk?
I know. If I say, let's hook up our brains to computers, everybody's like, no.
Well, I guess I would say maybe no to him in this regard at this time. So what we're talking about this week is Elon Musk's announcement of Neuralink, or rather of purchasing of the startup called Neuralink and developing what they're calling a neural lace. So the ability to basically have computers read your brainwaves. To integrate for a beautiful cyborg tomorrow.
Yeah, well, and it's a two-way thing, right? It's not just like reading. I'm sure it's a completely new way to interact with computers. And he's talked a lot about how he feels that we're already, you know, when you talk about you know, becoming cyborgs and having, you know, humans and robots becoming closer and closer together, or humans and machines, you know, working closer and closer together. He says, you know, like, you have a phone. That's an extension of you. It gives you access to way more information than we've ever had before. And you can do so many things with that, but it's just too slow. And the way to improve that connection, the way to make that faster, he uses the word bandwidth a lot. The way to do that is to have a connection that goes straight from your brain to some sort of computer interface. And yeah, I mean, he's talked about this in the past, and now there's a company. It's called Neuralink. It's not like they're about to launch a product, but they're going to start doing some research. And that's one of my red flags, this research component. But I'm curious what your thoughts are about it in general.
I think it's a thing that we are going to see in the future. And so I think people like Musk, and there's another guy, I think his name is Jefferson, who has a similar company. They're kind of calling dibs and trying to put down patents and copyrights on something that will most likely come to fruition in our lifetime. Probably experts are thinking in the next 20 years or so. So I'm not too worried at the moment. You know, I'm not going to, you know, get my tinfoil hat out quite yet. But from what I understand, the stage that they're at right now is actually requires neurosurgery. So to actually put electrodes on the brain, and in some aspects, this is already done. You know, individuals who have severe seizures and things like that, they can have a kind of brain surgery that puts electrodes on their brain that can help detect and stop seizures from happening. But that's like a really, really invasive and extreme case. But I think in the future we're going to see it happen more frequently. I'm just not down with boring holes in my head. I'm not.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I hear you saying on the brain. And really we're talking about like in
the brain. The brain, yeah.
Right, because last episode you talked about having an EEG read, you know, electricity in your brain and taking that data and combining that with writing. And this is not, we're not talking about something on top of your head, just reading, we're talking about something way in there. Just really, you know, I think about like The Matrix, right, is the clear example where they mm-hmm. have this, everybody has this connection, right, at the base of the skull, and essentially like they jam this rod in there, right? And yeah, I think we talked about this, right? I'm guessing that there are tons of electrodes all throughout the brain, and they're all, then you have this outlet essentially where you can plug something in there, and that's your human computer connection. So we're talking about crazy invasive, right? We're talking about something that would, and the thing is, I don't think they really know what they're doing either. And the idea of figuring that out, of how you get from the idea to actually getting it done, it's going to, like, how do you model for something like that? Or how do you simulate something like that? And that's going to require a lot of volunteers, you know, a lot of testing. And I mean, on one hand, I know that the human brain is extremely resilient. I always forget the name of the guy that had the tube that went straight through his head and he was still alive afterwards.
Phineas Gage.
Yeah, right. And so, we know that there are people who have had pieces of their brain removed or damaged, and they're able to adapt. They're not necessarily the same afterwards. They're able to adapt. So we can, to that extent, the human brain is resilient to a point, but what kind of prodding and cutting and inserting are we talking about? I don't know. Like, I wouldn't volunteer for any of that.
Yeah, me neither. And a lot of what I've been reading about this is, and that seems to be the major stopping point, at least at this point in time, is that the technology we have right now, the way to use it is just super invasive and dangerous. And yeah, not a lot of people lining up to get that done. And the projects that are interesting to me are the ones that aren't requiring intracranial penetration with a sharp, stabby object and poking into your gray and white matter. So, I mean, this is all like future stuff. It's not developed. It's not even in the research stage yet. But, you know, maybe instead of boring into your brain, you have nanobots that you eat and then they travel through your blood and go up into your brain that way. Or, you know, something you smell and you can sniff, snort nanobots. I don't know. But, you know, things that don't require brain surgery, I think, is going to be more of a way forward than what we're at right now. But it's such an early stage. It's hard to imagine something that hasn't happened before, if that makes sense. Yeah, it's hard to know what you don't know. So, I mean, I'm super stoked that people are researching it and looking at it. I mean, the idea of reading our brain's electronic signals is nothing new. I mean, it's been going on, I think the 70s is when the fMRI came out, the EEG rather, I'm sorry. And so we've been able to, quote unquote, read brainwaves for a really long time. We're not very good at it. And the data collected is kind of messy and fuzzy, and it's really hard to make heads or tails of it. But yeah, we're moving forward. And I think we look forward to the day when we can just think something and then it happens. And then we all feel like X-Men.
Yeah. Yeah. it's funny to hear him, Elon Musk, talk about how, you know, this whole idea that AI could be problematic for humans. And he says that really the advantage that they have is that they're faster, right? Again, so really, how do we make that connection faster, right? Like typing something into our phone is not as fast as speaking to it, but we can only speak so fast and it can only understand so much. So I think that there are a lot of stopgaps between where we are now, which is essentially very basic EEG readings translated into some sort of input signal, you know, voice, you know, there's a lot, I think, that we can do before jamming something into the brain and then reading those signals, because we don't really, so much of that is hypothetical too, right? Like, how do you read the signals? What do the signals actually mean? And I think that once we figure out the way to have that connection, then it's going to be a lot of fun, because then there's going to be a lot of testing, a lot of like essentially interpreting a different language. And I mean, we don't even know if, you know, how similar that language is between any two people, right? So there's a lot of things that we'll figure out, but the main, like the most fun part will be what the interface will be. And I can't imagine a world where it isn't some sort of physical interface, just because of how complex the brain is, how large it is, how many things are happening in there at one time. You can't just, like, it would be really hard to read from the outside and go deep, and you know, it's complicated. So I'm really curious what that'll look like, and how can you even wire up a brain? Can you wire up a brain completely, or do you only wire up certain areas? And even like further down the road, like I'm curious what you think we'll use it for, because I mean the ultimate goal is like everything, right? Like we just connect to machines so we can do anything. But right now it's kind of funny for me to hear Elon Musk talking about like, well, you know, we have the phone, but we need to interact with it faster. So essentially, there's a great episode of South Park where they have a version of Twitter that's controlled by your mind. So the idea is that you can immediately tweet things. Like I'm wondering how much of that we'll see before we see anything that's actually, useful or revolutionary?
I mean, the whole idea, I mean, two main things. One, the idea that, hey, we need to put computer parts in our brain so we can combat AI, that sounds dumb. That sounds like, hey, there was a noise in that dark, scary alleyway. We should go check it out. I mean, that's how it processes in my brain, that, you know, putting technology in our brain to quote unquote, combat the dangers of technology. That, how could that possibly go wrong?
That's a good point, because I think his argument is, I don't want to speak, you know, for Elon Musk incorrectly, but I believe his argument is that, you know, we can have control over artificial intelligence if we're faster. And, you know, one of the things that like Ghost in the Shell just came out, and I've been, you know, absorbing Ghost in the Shell stuff for over 20 years. And one of the things that happens in those stories is that the more that people become machines, the more that we have technology integrated into our bodies, then like people hacking becomes a thing. And in those movies, they call them ghost hacking, right? So that is actually... That's a very clear and present danger, at least to me, in that sense. I still see his point, but I'm with you also. What is that leaving us vulnerable to?
Yeah, and again, I feel like security is so crappy that, yeah, I have a phone and yeah, you can hack it, but you can't turn me into a ghost. You can't like reprogram me, a Maturian candidate me, or anything like that. And then it doesn't even have to be that insidious. And I know earlier this, I guess it was last week now, you know, Congress pushed through that horrific bill about being able to sell your ISP information to whoever wants to buy it, to advertisers. And that got me thinking, like, what if there was a bill that said that the whatever is implanting this information in your head or carrying the signal from your brain to the computer and back again, or whatever is, you know, supporting all that, what if they get the right to sell your quote unquote brain browser history, you know, and they could basically buy your thoughts? Like, that's so creepy to me. And again, it's not insidious at all. It's just Congress, which I guess might be kind of insidious. But yeah, like I feel like there's very real problems now that you could see being projected onto something down the road.
Yeah, I mean, again, to that ISP thing is so strange. Like, I have no idea why you would do that to
money,
people.
Money, money, money.
Yeah, but even it's like, why?
Money.
I mean, I know who the money is for, right? But as far as Congress doing that, right? It's just so. It does seem insidious. It doesn't matter how you frame it, because it's almost like, well, you know, privacy, you know, a breach of privacy is inevitable. So let's just, you know, let's just make sure that everybody can do something with it. Or like, man, they're storing all that data. That costs money. So we might as well, you know, help them out a little bit. Like, I don't, and the whole thing is really strange. And the whole thing about the internet is that it's a connection of things, right? So anything that is essentially transmitting is there. And, you know, if we're faster, right, with this computer interface, people who can do this type of hacking, for example, right, and invade your privacy are also going to become faster and better at it. So we're opening up, like, I don't think anything is going to change from how it is now. I don't think anything is going to be more secure. I think we'll always be in this game where we'll be able to create better security, and we'll be able to break that security, and then we'll make it better, and then someone will break it, and then that'll be nonstop. And now we're talking about our brains. And in terms of like the maturing candidate and things like that, I mean, if we're talking about having your whole brain wired up, I mean, an extreme version of that would be full control. And not control necessarily of your thoughts, but definitely control of your movements. Could be control of, like, let's say it, there was a vote in Congress for, you know, brain data to be sellable or not. And then all you had to do was hack into enough congressmen, enough senators to just move their hands so they hit the yes button and not the no button. And that sounds like something that's doable if you're already completely wired into the brain.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really easy to think up the doomsday scenarios because sci-fi has been doing it for so long, and I think that's the low-hanging fruit, but definitely something that needs to be talked about because technology always outpaces, you know, ethics and legislation about those ethics. So, you know, all that kind of put aside, you know, if let's assume a brighter future, a more Josue-friendly future, what could you see this being cool for? Like, what if it wasn't invasive, would you sign up, and what would you want to, what would get you to sign up?
Well, again, I'm assuming it's going to be invasive, period. I don't, okay, so, all right. So I think that right now we are wowed, right, by VR and AR. You saw HoloLens recently and you know, you're on board. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, now we're talking about that being completely, like, the interface is so small and so, it's not something that you would wear. It's not wearable, right? Like, it completely changes. Now you essentially become part of the technology and not wearing technology. And I feel weird about being able to turn it on and off. So, I mean, the idea of having a plug in the back of your head or somewhere where you can plug into stuff, I don't know, it's hard to not think about my personal feelings about being able to turn on and off that stuff and be able to put it on and take it off. But man, I'm 100% in to be able to have, I mean, it's not going to be like Tron where you're like traveling through a digital city necessarily, right? But be able to actually have virtual worlds and interact with data and other people in a completely different way. In really like a without limitation in a way, right? And to be able to have that experience be a full body experience and not just a tactile experience in terms of like your hands or, you know, some sort of haptic feedback, to be able to have that whole thing be translated into you, to essentially like be able to enter simulations. And, but also just the idea of how productive we could be if we could, because I imagine that we, just like people can type faster now than they used to be able to, once we're wired directly, I think we'll be able to do things that we, it's almost hard for us to imagine right now. And I can imagine, a lot, regardless. And I can imagine just the, maybe our work days, ideally our work days would be a lot shorter, or because we'd be able to do a lot more in a lot less time, be able to be way more creative. We'd be able to make more things. We'd be able to just, I think, you know, we're always limited by what we know, but I think that a lot of the technological advances that we want to see, we'll be able to get to them quicker because this will allow us to do everything faster. So maybe, you know, our lifespan, we'll see lifespan differently once we're able to have that sort of interaction, because we can do so much more in less time.
Yeah, this idea of the interface to me is so interesting, because if you want to go faster, to me the idea is that there is no interface. Like it is not necessarily organic, because it will be synthetic, but I like to think of it in my brain as a magneto, you know, where I look at something and I squint my eyes and something happens. Like that to me is, if you want to have something that's functioning as fast as the human brain can function, you have to cut out anything outside of the brain. I mean, because even an impulse from your brain to your hand is going to take longer than from one neuron to the next. So yeah. I think that'd be really cool. It reminds me of some of the VR games I've played that use the eye tracking, you know, the fact that I just look at something and blink and something happens. I think it would probably be more refined than that in the future. But that was a really fun experience of, you know, basically just using my eyes as the interface to look around and make decisions about things. And that is a lot slower than if it was just my brain firing, you know, think about how fast your brain reacts when you walk, when you chew, when you're writing. I mean, all those signals are just rapid fire. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it would have to be something internal, because anything external would require additional drag, I guess, more friction.
Do you ever listen to podcasts faster?
Yes, I have.
1X? So have you ever gone, like, do you ever change it back to 1X after you're listening to it faster?
It feels so slow.
Right? Because it's relative.
Everyone is talking at a pace like this.
Like the sloth in Zootopia. Exactly.
I just did the sloth face. I know you can't see it.
Oh, you did do it. I couldn't see it. Oh, okay.
I just did the sloth face. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it would be – I think that relativity would apply there too. Again, like once you start doing something faster, then it just feels – that's your new normal. So how fast could we be, right? How fast could things become? How slow would it feel to have to make something – like you said, with your hands versus with your thought, or even just like looking at it and blinking, right? That interaction. Like I think we would be able to notice a difference. There's some things that people like don't notice. Like I can see the frame rate of a movie or the resolution. Like I can notice these things that a lot of people have no, you know, they don't see them. There are things like variations in color, right? That you can train your brain to just be better at picking up the subtleties. And so we have examples of ways that our brain can do way more than we do on a regular basis. And again, just the idea that I can consume more information by running it faster with something as simple as podcasts or audiobooks, I think it you know, the same thing will apply, but way, 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 way faster, because our brain moves way faster than that. And another thing that I'm really excited about is there's only so much memory that we can hold in our mind, especially like active memory. So what if I plug an external hard drive into this baby? What can I do then, right? So then every single interaction, right now we're talking about like the grain from in that episode of Black Mirror, the history of you, the entire history of you. Yeah, right? The grain, where essentially that's the point. It's that you can store everything. And you can always go back to it. Like that is something that, again, Black Mirror shows a very it's like a horror version of it. But I absolutely want that 100%. And this is a way to make that possible. Like the grain is essentially a version of that. I mean, if you remember the end of that episode, right? You know, we see kind of this one electrode that's in the brain, which actually I hadn't thought about that. But I mean, I don't think we even know if it's even possible to have like that one contact place where we can interpret all the data in a certain way, instead of like how we're doing now with an EEG, trying to read it from all over the place.
Yeah.
We don't know.
No. One, it's hard because, again, we don't know a whole lot about the brain. I mean, we know a lot more than we know more now than we ever have before. But, I mean, we're still you know, throwing stones and, or, you know, throwing spaghetti against the wall to see if it sticks. You know, we're not sure about things. We have basic ideas. We have basic concepts. You know, I know that if there's damage in this general area, something happens. But, you know, being able to read electrical signals and the parse the difference between individuals, and it just, I mean, it actually reminds me a lot of like a polygraph, which are notoriously unreliable. So I think that the big ideas right now are maybe, at least for me at this point, too grandiose. I really like to think about the small applications for it. You know, things that I could, like shortcuts. I would want my brain wired for hotkeys so that I could do shortcuts. So, yeah, I know right now you can remote start your car with the push of a button. Well, I don't want to push a button. I just want to think of my car and have it turn on. You know, something like that would be a really cool thing to do. That does remind me, there is, a product for people who are blind to drive cars by reading their electrical signals.
Again, EEG interfaces. I mean, one of the things that's really exciting is that EEGs are pretty cheap now. You can get a basic one for a couple $100 and it looks kind of futuristic, and you can plug it into different apps and you can get all sorts of data from it. And, you know, I mean, that's so far from the type of thing that we would need to really have this type of neural lace, right? Like a direct interaction. But like, there are small things that are happening, and I think that, I don't know, how do you, the way I think of it, and maybe it's because of watching The Matrix too much, I always think of, well, I'm going to plug in and then, like, I'm shut down, but then now my mind is able to, or my brain is able to navigate infinity and do anything. That's the way I envision it. Do you see it, do you think about it in that way?
I hadn't. I guess that just really kind of, it creeps me out. That idea of the body and the mind separating completely like that. I guess I see in my, I guess, world, I would want something like Minority Report, but instead of having to use the glove to go whoosh, 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 you know, it's all done, you know, with eye twitches or like muscle twitches or something like that. So like real subtle, quick decision-making. Cause I mean, that is one thing that would bother me, is the complete inactivity of if we could do everything in our brains, we would just sit in a chair. And I think there's some interesting questions that come up about, is that living, or what kind of quality of life is that? And I think about the characters in WALL-E, you know, sitting in their floating chairs. And I mean, everybody in The Matrix is super sleek and svelte and all, probably because they have like no food. But you know, that's, I think it would fundamentally change what it means to be human if you could just separate your mind from your body and just say, peace out, meat bags.
So do you see it as, so like when you're envisioning something like being able to make things happen with the blink of an eye, you're thinking, you're walking around, you're being you, just now you have these superpowers.
Yeah, I guess that's a good way to think about it. I like thinking about them as superpowers.
Okay. Well, I always go back to like this idea of, and like we talked about, like the additional friction, right? Like, can we walk and be connected to a computer at the same time? Right? Like, can we actually do that? I don't know. Nobody knows. But I did find something really interesting. There's a company called Halo Neuroscience. And they have this I saw it in the news because the San Francisco Giants have made a deal with them where they're going to use this device to help their players train. And what it does is it does what they call neural priming, right? So the idea is that it's introducing electrical signals in the area of the brain that deals with muscle activity and physical activity. And then by priming it, once you start training, you're actually improving essentially the brain's recall of proper technique and strength and all these other things. So it looks like a Beats headset, and you put it on and you wear it for 20 minutes and the effect lasts for an hour. And the effect, they're calling it hyperplasticity. So it allows, so then the idea is, right, in this case, it is physical activity. But ideally, you could do the same thing where, like, before a class, you have a student wear it for 20 minutes. I'm guessing, right? This is me guessing. You would wear it for 20 minutes, and then for that next hour, everything that they learn, they would learn better and have better recall of it afterwards. And just the idea that you, again, physical activity, it's the same way, right? Like, you're practicing, you're learning how to do it. Your brain is getting better at that. And you're improving the connections, you know, throughout your nervous system to be able to redo those activities later. So that's an entirely new thing that I didn't even think of, you know, going along the lines of having a superpower. Like, you could be physically better because you have this sort of interface with your brain, like this direct contact with your brain, and you're able to do things like prime yourself for learning. Or, like, I would love to just download everything directly, but I think we're farther from that. So we're probably closer to being able to do something like that, where it's like, all right, everybody, we're going to be priming for the next 20 minutes. Boom. All right. And then, like, that would absolutely change so many things. And I'm curious to see, like, what kind of advantage. I mean, they did research. The Giants did some sort of research, and their internal results were that they saw enough of an improvement to just, like, announce that they're going to partner with this company, and they're going to do that from now on. So now we have, like, the first version of, like, well, is it fair if you're doing, if your players are in a state of hyperplasticity when they're training compared to other teams? So now is that an unfair advantage? Do we put that in the same category as performance-enhancing drugs? Are we going to outlaw them? Or now, like, are other teams going to start doing it because of that advantage? Like, I think that alone is one of the – it's going to be a really interesting conversation that's going to play out, because now we're talking about an actual, like, neuroscience being integrated with technology, working on human brains, and then – in this, like, public landscape, we're going to see it play out. It's, again, I think we have no idea where this could lead to.
And it's one of those things where history repeats itself, because this conversation sounds so similar to athletes who have had either a prosthetic and, you know, not being allowed into the Olympics because having a prosthetic leg gives you, in theory, gives you more of, I don't know, more speed or distance or whatever. And now we're talking about moving from physical external technology to something that's internal and neurally interfaced. And I think it's a really important question to ask, because even if a Neuralink type situation is farther away, the idea of using neurochemicals or psychotropic medications to boost attention or boost memory or to enhance a player's ability to focus, like, those things are here. Like, there's versions that are on the market right now, and I mean, most of them are pretty shammy, but, like, this idea of just because we can't, and I think this was actually Jay McGonigal's response to that Elon Musk article, was, just because we can doesn't mean we should. So again, this idea of, I mean, my next question would be, okay, well, who gets it? And like you said, is it fair? Is this something that turns our society into something like in the movie Elysium, where, you know, the very wealthy live on a ring world and can step into their pod and have their cancer cured in 5 seconds, while people on Earth are dying from the flu because they can't afford it? And I mean, that's the big thing right now in terms of education and these you know, neural enhancement supplements, is that it's giving an edge to the people who already have a huge edge, and increasing the disparity between education and learning and the impact of economic status. And I see this as just like a further continuation of that.
It's going to be really interesting to see this play out. I think it's exciting in a way for me, because, like you said, like, yeah, we've seen, for example, look up baseball and Ritalin, for example, right? Like, right, there were these high incidences of baseball players asking for ADHD medication to help them focus, right? But now we're talking about, well, are those headphones that they have on, or is that a Halo Neuroscience neuroprimer, right? I mean, those are things. How can you even prove that afterwards? And I don't know. I mean, is that, like, what kind of wearable are you wearing? What is that wearable doing for you? Like, I don't know. I mean, and it's exciting in the sense that it is, we're talking about, in many ways, it is a human electronic interface in that we are playing with electrical signals, right? And we are doing things in a way where we might have thought about like resistors and transistors and a motherboard before. And now we're talking about, well, this wearable is sending a pulse and that's helping the heart or the brain or do this or that, or it's on the particular muscle. And playing with that in this way is, I don't know. Like there's so much that can happen.
Yeah. And I think that's what the conversation is so important to have, is you don't want to be having conversations about the ethics or safety after the thing is done, because then you're already moving on to the next thing. So it is definitely exciting. You know, it does feel very futuristic. You know, the idea of, oh, we're going to hook your brain up to a computer and you'll be able to work at the speed of your brain or whatnot. And again, like we said, this what's proposed by Elon Musk and others is much, much further down the line. And we're, you know, a decade or two out from anything like that really happening. But I do think you're starting to see bits of it up here. And it's kind of like easing into this idea of us becoming more cybernetically enhanced humanoids. Maybe they'll come up with a new term. We're no longer Homo sapien. We're Homo technology and or something.
That's not going to stick.
That's not going to stick.
Yeah,
now. I'll work on it.
You know, on the idea of the research and how fast this is going to move, and you know, my response and yours is like, we're not going to let that happen. But just like the farthest advances that we've made in that area are people who had some sort of medical condition, I think that my position would completely change if for some reason I had an accident and I couldn't walk and someone said, hey, we can fix your legs, but we're going to have to like insert all these electrodes into your head. Now I'm way more open to that conversation. And I think that probably the first advances are going to be people who are willing to be part of these types of experiments, because they're going to be experiments, you know, voluntarily, are going to be people who probably, one, either have something that they want to, like a problem that they want to fix or some sort of impairment that they want to resolve. And then the other extreme of that might be people who are like flooded with cash and really want superpowers, like you said. Like there's something, again, I just saw it goes in the Shell, so it's something that is prevalent there. It's like, I want better eyesight. I want faster legs. I want, you know, something completely different. And the only way to do that properly would be to do that kind of connection. And then, so I think that people will be open to it for different reasons. And they'll probably, like they being Neuralink and other companies like it that will inevitably pop up over the next few years, will have more than enough people to play with. Ethics aside, right? That's a whole other conversation. But I think that now that it's happening, I think it will happen. And probably faster than I thought when I first started thinking about it. So I'm curious, I mean, are there any scenarios where you see that you would be willing to participate in any kind of experimentation like that?
I think you are absolutely right that the first people up are going to be the ones who can benefit from it in terms of the risk reward type of thing. So for example, like, hey, Kelly, you know, if we drill into your brain, you'll be able to do this 2 times faster. Well, that's incredibly invasive, and the risk of brain surgery for something that I don't see as valuable, like the risk, the pro-con is incredibly weighted towards the con, whereas somebody who maybe lost the use of their legs or is suffering from, you know, debilitating seizures, you know, that's a very different conversation. So I have a hard time, because then I feel like the most vulnerable us are the ones who become the lab rats, and that leaves a very bad taste in my mouth. But I think what would have to happen is either the reward for the risk would have to be, they have to be equal. So either it has to be really chill and I'd get a pretty lame superpower, or if it was really intense and somewhat dangerous and risky, then, you know, I would want something pretty substantial in return for that kind of health investment.
Oh, we live in exciting times, Kelly.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for when I'm old and I can get a brain transplant. That's what I want.
I was just thinking of that. I was just thinking, like, how is this conversation going to change as we're getting older?
All right, well, let's come back.
Well, can I live longer?
Let's come back in 40 years, and we'll talk through our neural interfaces made by Neuralink.
Yep.
And then Congress will sell our conversation to the highest bidder.
Yep. Sounds about right.
On that uplifting note, thank you all for tuning in to Psych Tech. If you need more Psych Tech action in your life, check us out on Twitter at Psych Tech Cast. You can also find us on the web at www.psychtechpodcast.com. Josue and I are also on Twitter, so if you want to get at us individually, he is at Josue A. Cardona, and I am at Kelly N. Dunlap. And be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. Please upvote us and give us stars, 5 of them preferably. That really does help us out a whole lot. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you in 2 weeks.